Good morning and welcome to episode 201 of Taking the Charge podcast with you from Regensburg, Germany. I'm David Hein of Hein News. Thank you for stopping by. Lots of hoops going on. Lots of youth hoops. I'm in heaven. Have the streams going on basically from the time I get up to the time I go to bed. Lots of good stuff. A couple of nice interviews to put out there for you guys today, this week. And I guess we'll talk a little bit about some of the stuff going on. Basically two big tournaments that are ongoing. That being the U20 European Championship in Helsinki. That is currently in the round of 16 stage. And then you have the FIBA Americas under 18 championship, that being qualifiers for the under 19 world championship. And that's a short one. That's only 4 days, I guess 5 days, Tuesday to Saturday. Those two going on, some preparation games for the Olympics also taking place right now. Really haven't been watching that, been focusing on the youth ball, of course. Before we get to that, why don't we get the housekeeping out of the way. If you want to get in contact with the show, easiest way is to catch me on Twitter. That's Hein News, HEINNEWS. There's the Facebook group. That's you just put in Taking the Charge podcast, and you'll find the group there. Join it and have some fun with the guys there. And the email is HeinNews@gmx.de, and the website is HeinNews.com. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/takingthecharge, all one word. You can pledge a monthly amount, show the support of the show. That would be fantastic. One person to do that so far is Norbert Opitz. Thanks to him for pledging support, showing the love of the show. Really appreciate it. Everybody, please go out there and it doesn't have to be a lot, but every bit does help. So please, go out there, patreon.com/ Taking the Charge. First of all, I the FIBA Europe has been, I guess it's going on 2 days now, and by the time the podcast comes out, it may have been decided already. The announcement has not been made about the under 18 European Championship, whether or not it actually does take place in Samsun, Turkey or not. A lot of people have been asking me about it. I do not know. I don't have any insider information on that. But given the fact that it was supposed to be announced, it was billed to be announced, I guess yesterday or maybe even the day before. It seems to me, again, this is no insider information, it seems to me that it's going to be moved, and that they're basically just looking to solidify, make sure that the arena is available, arenas are available, make sure that the hotels are there. I guess probably those are the two main things. Whether or not there's enough transportation or whatnot, I think that's probably a little bit secondary. But mainly those two, if the arena is available And if there's enough hotels of a high enough quality to satisfy the 16 teams there, because that's a pretty big deal. So, again, you know, it hasn't been announced today. I was kind of waiting maybe to do the show a little bit later and maybe even talk about it. But it hasn't been announced. And again, I that's what not having the announcement being done yet tells me, is that it's going to be moved. Again, no insider information, but that's what it tells me. Okay, so that went out of the way. One bit of other sort of, I guess, bureaucratical news, if you will. It has been announced that the German Basketball League, BBL, does have a new name sponsor, and that is Easy Credit. So it will be the Easy Credit BBL. The website, easycreditbbl.de, was up for a while today, but wasn't up later. So it's a 5-year deal with an option for 3 additional years. So pretty big news. Of course, they didn't announce any financials on that. But pretty big news, and I think it's Easy Credit is a pretty big player here in Germany. They have one of the arenas, or used to have one of the arenas named the name you're asked for, one of the arenas, football arenas. So some good stuff there. We'll see. Lots of bank jokes going around Twitter among the German media members, bloggers, whatnot. So, all right. So I guess let's start with the under, what do we want to start with? I guess we'll do under 18 just because I have that open right now. It's two groups of four. So they play each other 3 games, and then the top two go to the semifinals. And the semifinals are on Friday. The four semifinalists are then the qualifiers. Are the teams that make it to the 2017 FIBA Under 19 World Championship. So first day. I thought that, so USA, Canada were pretty comfortable victors over Puerto Rico and Argentina, respectively. I thought Dominican Republic actually might beat Brazil, but actually this is a pretty nice Brazil team. And I kind of go to some of the teams a little bit. So they beat Brazil. They beat Dominican Republic in Group A, which also has the Canada, Argentina. And then Group B has Chile, the hosts, and Virgin Islands as the other teams, along with USA and Puerto Rico. A couple of big games today on Wednesday. You have Puerto Rico and Chile. It seems to me that if Chile win that game, they are through. I guess they're not officially through, but more or less would be through. Puerto Rico lost the first game to USA. And the other one is Brazil and Argentina. Would seem that in that side that the it would seem that the winner of that would probably go through with Canada, would imagine. Some interesting teams for sure, and I guess we'll go alphabetically. Argentina, they have a couple of kids. They have Lautaro Lopez from the under 17 World Championships, the 99 generation that jumped up. They were hoping to have Francisco Cafaro, the big 2000 center. And also Santiago Vallet, the younger brother, the younger brother of Juan Valet, the Argentinian who was drafted, I guess that was last year. And they both would have definitely given this team some more punch. As it stands, it's not the greatest of teams. It's probably one of the weaker teams. You have Facundo Corvalan, who kind of runs the point. And you have the big being Lautaro Berra, but it's just not that that solid of a team. You know, there's not a lot of you know, big name guys that can do a lot of damage. Brazil, pretty impressed with Brazil. I really like Gabriel Galvanini, shooting guard. Pretty good size. I think you're 6'7", is that right? 6'7"? Yeah, 6'7". Could shoot a little bit. Really versatile. Does a lot of different things. And was really impressive in that first game. Scored 25. And like him a lot. They have a couple of nice bigs in Lucas Pereira and Michael Uchendu, both pretty nice bigs. Felipe Ruvio is a nice guard who kind of is a calming influence on the game. Yagos Dos Santos is sort of a short, quick guard. Shoots the ball, jacks it up a lot. A couple of interesting guys for sure. Aquiles Ferreira had a nice big old power dunk. Kind of impressed in that one. Canada going down the line, you know, definitely guy to watch without a doubt is Nikhil Alexander Walker. Definitely a guy way up there. Lindell Wigginton obviously helped Oak Hill to the U.S. high school title. There's a lot to like about Shai Alexander as well. Who else is there? Let's see. Abu Kigab. He was at the under-19s last year. As an underage, and he's a nice player who can a big energy guy. I was kind of hoping that that Jaden Badaiko, they're young as in 15, he's a 2000er. I was kind of hoping he might get some more action against the against Argentina, being, you know, that they were up by 30 after, you know, midway in the third, and ended up getting 6.5 minutes or something like that. But, you know, would have been nice to, I thought he could have, I thought Coach Arana could have put him in a little bit more. Interesting guy. But their main big guy is probably say it's O'Shea Brissett, but it's not a big team, and I think you know, that's the reason why they brought in Badaiku and also Grant Shepherd, both of those guys from the under 17 team. Not a lot of size in this group, but if you look at the trio of Nikhil Walker, Lindell Wigginton, and Shai Alexander. Definitely a nice grouping right there. Chile, for me, against Virgin Islands, won by 23. For me, what was really impressive was how calm and collected this team is. And definitely the leader of this is Nicolas Aguirre. You know, people, you know, may know him from the Albert Schweitzer 2 years ago, where they also had Felipe Haas, But you know, you look at and I love Aguirre's game, and I think he's going to be a fantastic player down the road without a doubt. And you look at Ignacio Arroyo, who is another strong point guard. You also have a strong guard in Camilo Torres. You know, it's a very, very strong guard team, guard-dominated team. Also, Marcelo Perez. You know, there's not a lot of bigs. You know, you have Felipe Haza, who's, yeah, he's solid. He's not spectacular at all. He's a solid guy. Understands the game, can pass the ball. Maxwell Lorca is a kid who, you know, he's got a little bit of length and can do some things inside. I think maybe over the course of the tournament, maybe get a little bit more out of Alvaro Pimentel, who's their 2000er. But, you know, that's, you know, they're not counting on that. But, you know, this is definitely be a guard-dominated team. And which is, I think, one of the reasons why they have a serious shot against beat Puerto Rico, because Puerto Rico is also, you know, not really the biggest of teams either. You know, they try to you know, rely on their guards, which is a big reason why they got dominated by the Americans, even though they turned the ball over 26 times. That's just because, you know, they're not used to that kind of pressure. Chile definitely impressed, and I really, really hope they get it done, and that we can see them at the under 19s next year in Cairo. Dominican Republic, you know, from this qualifying team, they're missing Justin Minaya and Alonzo Frink. You put those two guys on this team, and it looks a lot different. You know, they brought up Anderson Mirambao from the under-17s, and you know, they are really small, and they need him to come in there and play. You know, he is probably one of their better players. You know, you also have Jose Perez. You know, Lionel Figueroa is. You know, there's a little bit of interesting stuff in there. You know, Pichardo, you could say, okay, maybe a little bit. But, you know, you put Minaya and Frink on this team, and, you know, they're a lot more, you know, they could strike a little bit of fear into some other teams. Puerto Rico, like I was saying, you know, you have Cristian Negron is probably their main guy. Javon Jackson, you know, you're not going to see as bad of a game from him as you did against the Americans. You know, he's going to need to have a good game against those Chilean guards if they want to win. Yeah, so I think those are their two main guys, I suppose, also with Ethan Thompson as well. You know, it is a pretty experienced team, and the Chileans, they're going to be ready. They're like we said, they're so guard dominant that you know, they're going to be a tough group to knock off. USA next. Hey man, it's a very nice team with loads of talent. You know, Marcel Fultz. Starting with him, Markel Fultz, I believe he's going to Washington. Mitchell Porter Jr., fantastic talent. You know, great trio of big men with Jared Allen, James Banks. Believe both of those guys are going to Texas to play for the USA coach Shaka Smart, and then you also have Muhammad Bamba. And I mean, really, that's enough. But you also have Paul Washington, who's a pretty nice, good size. Yeah, just, you know, I don't think anybody can match that I don't think anybody can match that size. And you got a guy like, you know, you got guys like Trey Young to kind of handle the ball as well. And yeah, I mean, Porter I think has a chance to be, you know, all tournament team, all star five. Last team, Virgin Islands. I was kind of expecting a little bit more from them. Really, there's a lot to like about Nicholas Claxton, and I guess he's probably going in before I saw him. You know, I was expecting more things, but yeah, they're not they are lacking in some areas. You know, Jemiah Simmons is probably their second best player, you know, but, you know, he's having to play sort of a big man at 6'4". You know, Claxton 6'7", who, you know, they're making him play down low, but really he's probably more of a wing guy. So he's not going to, you know, he's going to be, you know, challenged quite a bit against some of the bigger players just because he's going to need to play down there. You know, definitely those two guys, Claxton even more than Simmons. I think Claxton's going to make some noise over the long haul. I guess really, you know, you look at the groups, you know, I think Givens are Canada and USA in the semifinals, meaning in the under-19 World Championship. And I think the two teams that also won yesterday, Brazil and Chile, will also make it. Brazil, again, like I said, facing Argentina. And Chile facing Puerto Rico. And like I said, if Puerto Rico can get that victory tonight, you know, then they definitely have the inside track. That's going to be, you know, those two games tonight are going to be some big time games. Those two should probably decide who's going to the World Championship, along with USA and Canada. Anything other than that would kind of shock me. Okay, let's move over to the under 20, getting there, under 20 European Championship. Let's just see if there is any news about the under 18s. Under 20 European Championship. We are, I guess, halfway through the round of 16, and you have already into the quarterfinals. Are the Czech Republic, who knocked off Slovenia in overtime, Spain. I'm looking to see, waiting for the results to come back up because they're not on right now. Spain, who eased past Hungary. Hungary's probably one of the worst teams here. Turkey survives a tough fight against France, who are 0-4, and probably one of the most surprising teams without a win. Latvia beat Sweden, and then right now you have Finland losing to Lithuania. I know Markkanen, Lauri Markkanen, the Lithuanian's big star, picked up his third foul in the first half with a few minutes left in the first half, so that's going to be tough. And then you have Serbia and Italy. Serbia beating Italy right now. It's a pretty good Italy group. And Serbia, Serbia a bit down right now this year, with this under 20 group. The other ones are Germany and, against Israel, and, Ukraine against, Belgium are the final two round of 16 games. Bracket. So you have Turkey taking on, Serbia, Italy winner, which really I can go either way, but I do see Turkey winning that game. Czech Republic looking like they'll probably have to face Lithuania, and I would say that Lithuania probably takes that. although Varnas, what's his name? Martinez Varnas broke a toe, I think, and is out for the rest of the tournament. But I think that they should have enough to get by the Czechs. Germany, I foresee getting past Israel and Ukraine getting past Belgium, but I see Germany getting into the semifinals, I guess. Yeah, semifinals. and then you have Spain against Latvia. And I would imagine that'd be Spain. If Germany actually win that game, that would be the first time that, that Germany have ever won a quarterfinal in the men's FIBA Europe youth competition. First time ever, again, ever that Germany have won a quarterfinal in a youth competition. So big game against either Ukraine or Belgium if they get past Israel then in a couple hours. yeah, I guess run down some of the guys. You look at Turkey's this 96 generation is the one that won the under 18s in Konya. So you have Güven, you have Geçim, you have Ergulu, Ulubay, Ertseven has come up an age group. You don't have Korkmaz, so it's definitely a good grouping there. Germany, Kosia Moshidi has come up and has really dominated that quarter, that last game in group stage. I think he had 26 points in 22 minutes, and against Lithuania, and yeah, impressive. And he's really I can't wait to see what he does at under 18s. Italy have Mussini and Flaccadori as their main two weapons. Spain have Marc Garcia as probably their main guy. So it's a pretty solid group. Israel have David Blatt's son, Tamir Blatt. You also have, who else do we got there? Some pretty good players. Ekodas, Martinas Varhodas from Lithuania. I said Garcia from Spain. Prezel is from the Czech Republic. Vanderkos from Latvia. Obviously, that great shooter. Ukraines have Kobets and Mikhailikok, both really, really doing a good job here. Lambrecht has played really well for the Belgians. Andreas Obst has played really well for Germany. Stefan Penno has played pretty well for the Serbs. And Kubasima's here. He's played pretty decent. Him and Sarola together in the post. We mentioned the Turks, Ulubay and Ergulu. Ert Seven's been really strong. And can't wait to see what he goes down and does at the under-18s. So a good group of players here. It's been pretty nice to watch. It's fantastic. All the games are on YouTube, FIBA's YouTube channel. Go there, check it all out. All right, so I guess I've probably talked enough. Like I said, go check it out. On FIBA.com, you can go to find the tournaments. You could then also check out the tournaments live on streams on YouTube.com/FIBA, and all the links are there. Let's get to the interviews. I'm going to go back to a couple of chats I had about during the under 17s. I'm going to start with the Canadian coach. David DeVaro had a had a nice little chat with him after the after their final game. Obviously, it wasn't the final result that they wanted. You know, we talked a little bit about losing against Turkey, and about how RJ Barrett and Iggy Brzdeikis played and whatnot. So here's my chat with him. Enjoy, and we'll catch you on the other side.
So, Coach, one loss.
Yeah. Often it's a matter of when you lose a game.
Fifth place, finished strong. In general, maybe thoughts about how you think this team did, knowing everything going in, and how you guys performed in the end.
I thought our kids showed a lot of character after the tough loss to Turkey. I mean, we could have folded our tents and not competed because, you know, we came here to try to win a medal. But I thought the last 2 days we played the way that we're capable of playing, not just defensively but offensively, and moving the ball and sharing the ball. We've been trying to get that message across to our kids that, you know, we want to teach you how to play and be unselfish and not go one against three and one against four. And with the last 2 days, I thought we've done a really good job with that. So unfortunately, the Turkey game didn't work out well for us. We had a tough time on the glass and didn't shoot it fairly well. But that's all part of the process. It's a growth, right? For these young guys, this experience is valuable as they move on to the next experience.
Biggest lesson you think they learned then in this whole thing?
I think for our guys is that, I mean, that they played well. They played well and they became a team. We didn't have a lot of time to get to be together. And we're asking some kids to sacrifice and do some different things that they're not used to doing. And I thought by the end, I thought they kind of proved what they could do when you're a unit. And to beat two good teams the way we did the last two games is a credit to them. And it shows them that when they're on the same page and they're united, we can do some good things. And so I think they'll take that out of it, you know, learning from, you know, the disappointing loss and rebounding and from that loss. Some kids personally, us as a group. So I think they'll take that from it.
One of the things that maybe a lot of people in America don't really realize or take, you know, or just basically take for granted is the job that Coach Showalter does, you know, taking the group that he has really such short notice. I mean, with so little prep time, let's say that, and turning them into a really cohesive unit. You're kind of getting into that a little bit now because your training camp and our tryouts training camp is so late. Talk about that, and maybe also about what Don's able to do over in the States.
You know, I've had the privilege of speaking to Coach and being around Coach and listening to him talk and how he does it with his group. And I think he sent a clear message the other night when he didn't dress four of his or he didn't play four of his kids against Egypt because they weren't buying into the culture and what he wanted from them. And I think our guys are understanding that too. That, you know, again, it's not about you; it's about we. And I think I take that from him the most, and selling that together we can accomplish some great things that, you know, we can't do if we're just going to play individual and selfish basketball. And so I think that's the biggest thing I got from Coach is, you know, the importance of building that culture, that identity, and then sticking with it and believing with it.
Especially since your guys are slowly reaching a higher status.
Yes.
Let's say individually.
Yes. Individual. I mean, yeah, our guys, you know, are being recognized now. Like you said, they're reaching a higher status, and so it's easy to get caught up in all that. And so, but it's that fine balance as a coach too. You got to let them be who they are, but you also got to teach them that it's a team concept, and we're better as a team. And if we play like that, that will put you in a better situation, you know. And that's the biggest thing, is having these guys understand that if you share the ball, if you move the ball, and believe and trust each other, everyone will look good. If we don't do that, some people won't look as good.
I don't want to talk about everybody, but I kind of want to talk about two guys. Let's start with Iggy, because you know, he was a guy that that kind of took a bigger step this season during the season. You know, he played pretty well in at 16s, but was able to play at a higher level. Also with the Makers moving on, that there was more room for him. in general, you know, you saw him out there really take over more. What do you think about how Iggy, really the growth he's had, seeing him last year, watching him, observing him from afar, and then getting him back this time?
Well, you know, fortunately for Iggy, he sprained his ankle in camp this year, so he's probably used our trip to France to get himself in some kind of shape. But, yeah, he's taken some big steps. I mean, he's developed his all-around game, and he's a great rebounder. So we're teaching him how to defend with some space. But, and again, also trying to make the game easier for him in passing the ball and playing without the ball a little bit. You saw some of that today as well. But he's just improved so much over 1 year. Again, being in an environment where he's in a good environment where he's practicing against great players every day, that can only make him better. You know, a couple NBA guys, right? So
yeah, sure.
That's only going to make him better. And he's a hardworking young guy. He wants to be better. And I think, you know, next year will be a big year for him because, you know, Thon won't be there. So maybe it's time for Iggy to step up and take that role.
The other guys, RJ, came in really late. You know, let's not talk about the performance because we saw pretty much what he's capable of doing, which was pretty impressive, knowing that he's, what, a week into his 16th birthday, after his birthday. But maybe a little bit more because you saw it, the leadership. You know, you saw him before he went to the national team, the senior team, and maybe some of that leadership that maybe he, or what he learned from there and took into this team, like the development, even let's say a 2-3 week development of RJ.
No, and that was the biggest thing. When he came back to our team, that was the one thing I said to him. I said, I want you to bring the national team, the senior team, to our team and bring back some of those things that you were doing there, how hard you were playing, being a leader there. Not being a leader there, but just the being part of a group with leaders and bringing that back to our group. And so he's done that. Everything we've asked of RJ to do in this tournament, not just on the floor, but away from the floor and leading a group, he's done. This has been great for RJ. And, you know, it's just another step for him and another piece of his game that he's developing as he continues to mature.
Another tournament, another cycle is come to a close. 16s will be next summer. In general, maybe just thoughts about how fun this has been and for you, this past group, you know, the going from 16s to 17s, you know, another world championship.
You know, I've been fortunate enough, and it's always an honor for me to coach for our country. And with these guys, because I've been around these guys for more than just the 2 years, probably 3 years. And so to watch them do well and watch them grow, it's been exciting. Anytime you can participate in the World Championship and to watch these young guys grow and learn, it's rewarding for me.
Would you go with that?
All right. Excellent stuff. Always enjoyed meeting up with him at the championships. Unfortunately, not Toronto-based, so when I do make it to Toronto, don't really have a chance to see him, but definitely it's hope that I know they will probably make it back to the under-17s next year. The qualifiers are next year's under-17s. So second interview and second and final interview, just doing the two interviews today, quote, just the two interviews. Jonathan Giovanni, main man at Draft Express. Caught up with him on late in the tournament. Can't remember if it was actually on the final day. I think it was. And talked about the draft for him. That actually I think was later in the interview. But talked about the under-17s. Just kind of a wrap up to see what he thought about the guys there. So if you're looking for a little bit more under-17 World Championship fix. Here you go with Jonathan Giovanni, and then also a little bit of look back on the 2016 NBA draft. So catch you on the other side.
Jonathan Giovanni, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Hey, we're at the under-17 FIBA, 2016 FIBA under-17 World Championship. We're at the final day of action. Maybe I guess just first of all, you know, we're still ahead of the final, so we don't know who's going to win it. But in general, your thoughts about maybe the competition level and performance level of some of the teams?
I think we got a little bit spoiled 4 years ago. I think it was in Lithuania, maybe in Kaunas. the under 17 world championship was so loaded that year. I mean, there was probably like, I don't know, maybe 10 lottery picks to come out of that. It was insane, you know, between Hezonja and Saric and Okafor and Aaron Gordon, Stanley Johnson, Winslow and Exum and Ben Simmons. I mean, it was
on and on and on and
on. It goes on and on. It was outrageous. So I think 2 years ago in Dubai, probably a little bit more similar level to this year, a little bit more even outside of the U.S., you know, very dominant U.S. squad, even though not, you know, not a vintage U.S. team, definitely not the best team that the U.S. has had. So I think it's been good. I'm looking forward to this France-Canada game coming up here, but I think it's been solid. I mean, I love Zaragoza. Anytime you get to come to Spain and spend a week, it's always great. You can't complain about that.
Let's go a little bit about the USA team, because that might be one that the listeners outside the States might not know as well. Was there anybody that you really thought was going to make this team that didn't?
Not really. I mean, I was at the training camp, and I think that they took the right guys. You know, this isn't the best team that the U.S. has had, so they kind of, you know, cobbled together what they could. Even though they're dominating this tournament, they're winning every game by 40, still, it's far from a vintage U.S. squad. I think that's somewhat of a reflection of the weakness of the 2018 high school class. And so, I don't think that they missed anybody. No, I think that the USA basketball guys did a great job in picking this team.
You know, one of the things that Coach Don Showalter, you really have to tip your hat to him, is the fact that he's able to put these guys, you know, really form them into a unit, you know, really quick. You know, you have seven, eight guys, you know, from the year before at the 16s, and you know, they know them, you know, they know each other a little bit. But like looking at the roles that these guys play in their high schools, and to how they've adapted their games, who's like somebody who stands out in your opinion? Maybe not put up the numbers here, but who kind of, you know, really accepted his role and excelled in that role, and something that actually is something that's interesting down the road for you.
Coach Showalter is doing an amazing job, and you can't take for granted what he's doing, being able to, you know, year after year, you know, get these guys to buy in, play together, play hard, and really, you know, come together as a unit and be more than the sum of their parts. I think it's amazing, and it's a testament to, you know, USA basketball organization as a whole, with, you know, BJ Johnson and Sean Ford and the whole infrastructure, starting from when these guys are 15 years old, they're identified, they bring them into camps, and like, you know what, I think the world had a chance to play it, to compete with the US, when we were a little bit more scattered and we just took talent and just kind of threw them together and let them go. But when the U.S. is playing like this defensively, and they're just so organized and sharing the ball, and they really have an identity with their press, it's hard. You know, it's really hard just because these guys are so ahead physically. From a talent perspective, I mean, these guys are well known to me. I've been, you know, USA Basketball, I'm fortunate to go to Colorado Springs 3 or 4 times a year. And watch, you know, every camp they have, I'll do it, because it just, you get so much out of it. Starting with the, you know, the development camp in October, and then the different training camps in May and June. And so I don't miss a chance to watch these guys. And this under 17 group, I think I've seen them probably more than any other group of kids that are 17 years old. It's almost over scouting to me, so I've been focusing more a little bit on the other kids here, because I know the U.S. guys so well. But you know, I think the three guys that you kind of point to as being the backbone of the team, probably Wendell Carter with what he brings inside. We weren't really able to see the best of him in the semis because of foul trouble. Kevin Knox with the athleticism and the intensity and transition game that he brings. And then Troy Brown just with his versatility, being a 6'7 guy who can play 1-4, who guards and can pass, and can make an open shot, and is smart and unselfish. So I mean, those three guys have been the standouts. Marcus Howard has been huge here. You know, probably not the most talented guy, but
runs a good point guard.
Knows how to play, yeah. And you know, guards and makes up in shots. Funny because if you watch him in high school, people say he's not a point guard. People say he's not, you know, too, plays too selfishly. But when he puts that USA jersey on, it's just a different type of kid, and that's USA basketball coaching. That's classic. What they're able to get at these guys.
Canada is probably the country that you maybe have seen guys high school wise the most. And you know, you have the two kids down who were at Mount Verd, you know, Shitu and Barrett. Obviously Barrett was a late arrival here. Did he kind of live up to your expectations of how he would perform here, you know, just being a few days older, you know, after his 16th birthday?
Absolutely, he has. He has, and then some, honestly. It's hard for guys to live up to these lofty expectations that we put on them from such a young age, but he really exceeded that for me. I mean, the guy's talent is unbelievable. He has a long ways to go, obviously, still in many facets of his game, but in terms of talent, I think he's the best prospect here. Just athletically, how gifted he is, the way he can guard. I mean, he does everything, so I'm really, really impressed with him.
Anybody else on the Canadian team that you see that has impressed you?
I think this Canadian team is down. You know, maybe they're missing some guys. Maybe some guys aren't really able to show what they can do just because of the lack of preparation, or I don't know what it is. But I'm, you know, frankly, I've read so much about them coming into this tournament, and I think that's the problem, is that there's so many great Canadian players now in the NBA and in college that we kind of just assume that these guys are going to be that, and they're not. You know, so it's difficult, but no, honestly, I mean, I think that some of the guys that I had seen in other settings that were better in other settings, like Nembhard, like Shitu, and I thought these guys played a lot better in other places I've seen them, honestly.
We have, we're just about to watch Canada and France. Just looking at this this French team, you know, there's definitely athleticism that stands out for sure. There's a couple of really high-level guys too. Jalen Hoard obviously being one of the top guys, but you know, even they're big with Olivier Saar and you know, obviously the athleticism and power of Yves Pons is pretty special. Maybe just a little bit of what you think about this French team.
I think they're incredibly talented, and it's just a really nice group of kids leading into that under 18, under 19, you know, going to the senior national team. I mean, France is probably the most prolific country in the world for developing NBA talent outside of maybe Canada, maybe Australia are in that mix. I would put France right there too, with Canada. So, I mean, they just continue to deliver players, and, you know, Jalen Hoard is major talent. Obviously, like you said, Yves Pond, Olivier Saar is a little bit different trajectory. Some of these guys a little bit further away, but obviously has a world of upside. And then they have role players too. So I've been impressed with what I've seen with them. They were maybe a little bit unlucky to, you know, run into, you know, some, maybe losing to Korea in that first game probably set them back a little bit. But I think that there's a lot to look forward to with France.
Probably the biggest, one of the biggest attention grabbers in this tournament has also been Musa, Dusan Musa with Bosnia. You know, they came back from the round of 16, lost to grab ninth place. It seemed that that team was really lacking Shakiris, their power forward, who was at the under 16s. I guess, was there anybody who is going to interest you down the road on that team other than Musa? And then maybe just a couple words about what do you think about how Musa kind of developed, you know, seeing him, you know, going from 18s, watching some EuroLeague, and now here where he's again in the dominant role.
Are there a couple guys on Bosnia that probably could play college basketball if they wanted to? I don't know if at the highest level, but they won't, is my understanding. So I didn't see a whole lot, you know, in terms of NBA prospects other than Musa. You know, anytime you score over a point per minute playing the kind of role that he did, that's impressive. You know, there's some little bit concerns about his back maybe, you know, that hunch he has. It seems to be getting a little bit worse. I'm not a doctor, but I've never seen a guy with that pronounced of an arch in his back. And I know that it's something that they want him to work on. I don't know if he has. I mean, it's gonna take a major commitment from him. Again, I'm not a doctor, so that would be a concern moving forward long term. But he's obviously a special talent.
Let's talk a little bit about the finalists. Just because I don't think a lot of people had Turkey making the final. The talent is there, but they just haven't really performed very much this whole summer. You look at Batim, you look at Duran, you look at Attar. You know, maybe just what you think about this group.
I mean, I think it's partially a reflection of how weak this tournament is, that they're in the finals. The European 99 generation is clearly not the strongest. I'd be interested to see what else is out there going to the under 18 European Championship. I'll be there this summer. You know, I have to think that, you know, I don't know if 5 years from now Finland and Bosnia are going to hold up as being among, you know, that elite group of teams in that age group. So, they have a front court, you know, it's pretty solid. I don't think those guys are elite prospects, Attar and Duran. But I think it's, you have to take your hat off to the coach. I mean, his energy level on the sidelines has been amazing. They have a clear game plan. It didn't look like they had great chemistry earlier in the tournament, but they were able to kind of come together as a group and play more as a team. The guard play is not great, but it's been good enough. So I'll be interested to see what, you know, if they can keep it close to the U.S. in the first half. I'm not optimistic about that.
What do you think about Batim? You know, obviously, was a guy who played really, really well at the under-16s. You know, they lost to Lithuania. He went over to the States, Huntington, right?
Huntington Prep.
Huntington Prep. You saw a physical change in the body. You know, he hasn't really performed that well. You know, quarters and semis really performed really well here. Your thoughts about him in general?
He's a volume scorer. He's not a very efficient guy in terms of his turnovers and his shooting percentages. He has a little bit of athleticism in terms of, you know, run jump. He has a nose for scoring, which that's important to see at a young age. Some question marks about, you know, what kind of teammate he is and that kind of stuff. So we'll have to see how that plays out long term. They've gotten him to buy in a little bit more than I've seen him buy in other settings. So I don't consider him a top prospect, but in this 99 group of European players, I guess, you know, once you get outside those top three or four guys, it's kind of slim pickings.
The Asia came here with three teams again. You had Chinese Taipei start their first five games, were USA, Egypt, Turkey, Spain, Bosnia. So, I mean, I think that's probably the most difficult five game stretch of anybody in this tournament. I'm not saying they have loads of talent. Obviously, Lin Benson is down in Kentucky at a small school there. You have China here, who probably are disappointed that they ended up 10th. You know, they had never missed making the quarters. You have your big Zhu, and you have Bai out on the wing, and then with Korea, we just saw them play in the seventh place game, and you know they have this a little bit unorthodox style, a lot of energy, and Asia. What do you think in general? You know, you've been here now a couple times at 19s as well. You think that Asia's starting to make a little bit movement forward at all, or is it still they're lagging behind?
I think they're lagging behind. Still, I was impressed with Korea. They probably, you know, for them to make the quarters is an incredible accomplishment. Really well coached, organized team with some real talent, actually. Yeah. I don't know.
They're not deep. They only go seven, if that.
They don't have any size either, yeah. But they were able, you know, to give Australia a fight here in the game for
beat France in overtime.
I was impressed with Korea, so I don't know what that translates into long term, but I think China was obviously very down. Taiwan, the Taiwanese, not a whole lot there.
Africa, you had Mali, who was obviously long and athletic, and Egypt. with you know, their one of their hopefuls long term is the center Babel, and they also have the full bearded 17-year-old, or not yet 17-year-old, Mustafa. Just in general, the African contingent here.
I mean, if they both finished last, you know, 15 and 16, so that it shows you how much work there still is to go. I mean, those kids are so young that they really maybe haven't had a chance to be taken out of there to the U.S. or Spain. I mean, I know that Bebo is in Manresa, and you can see that progression that he's made in the last year. So, a long ways to go for those two.
Anybody else? I mean, that we haven't talked about, maybe one.
Lithuania.
Lithuania. We haven't talked about Spain either. I don't want to talk about every. I don't want to talk about every team, but I mean.
I love Lithuania. I love the way they play. Yeah. Character guys.
Who's some of your favorite guys you watch? I mean, I mean
the point guard.
Velika.
Yeah.
Yeah, he started really slow and then really took on the last couple of years.
Love him.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Micić a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
He just knows how to play, man. Great on the pick and roll. Finds open guys. Not a great shooter.
You know his big team coaches.
Yasikevich is
a good guy to learn from.
Absolutely, yeah. Maybe now in Barcelona, so
yeah.
Fun team to watch. Deep team too.
Yeah.
No like elite level NBA prospects, but I mean, you got to take your hat off of Lithuania, small country. The way that they're able to produce players year after year is incredible.
Spain, the host team. You know, if Gonzalez doesn't go down, maybe it's a little bit different of a story. You know, it's obviously him and you know, mainly Sergio Martinez. You have the two kids who were at the Jordan Brand international game in Para and Alassane. What do you think about these guys?
I think, I hate to keep harping on this, but the 99 European generation is down. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a team with 2.5 players, and so I'm a little bit worried for Spain, to be honest with you. I mean, you got to start asking question marks about loading up every roster with Serbians and Montenegrins and Slovenians.
At the club level, senior club level.
At such a young age, is that hurting the development of their younger guys? Or maybe they just can't compete with football or Formula One, or I don't know what, you know, but I mean, we need Spain to produce players for the world basketball. There's not a more important country in the world outside the U.S. than Spain, so I hope that they can keep developing players, because this is not a classic Spanish roster by any means.
The fact that we have Bosnia and the fact that we have Finland here, is that that's just a one-off? Or do you think you look at the teams that aren't here, you have Serbia, Germany, Italy, probably the
Croatia.
Yeah, Croatia 99 is down though.
I wasn't at the under-16 European Championship, so it's hard for me to say. I mean, maybe.
But do you think it's a one-off then, or do you think it's?
I have to think that Germany is on the rise, and that we're going to start seeing the German team, you know, be a top 3, top 4 team in Europe year after year, just based on what we're seeing at the other age categories. And then Serbia, Croatia. I mean, I can't imagine those teams missing many more of these, to be honest with you. So I don't want to put down, you know, Finland or any of these other countries, but yeah, that's I'd be interested to see what else there is in a 99 age group. It's a little bit early for me.
Yeah. Let's finish off more or less, but just maybe opinion about the under 18s coming up in Samsung. You know, I think Germany with that group that they played at Albert Schweitzer, you put Bunga on there. It's unclear, as far as I know, still unclear. I don't think Hartenstein makes it, but
I don't think he's gonna play.
You know, you put Bunga on that team, and you know they can do so many different things. You have Turkey if Ertseven plays and is motivated, maybe a couple of these 99s. You have Serbia with Simonic and Radonov. You have Spain, who you have to consider. You know, Italy will probably play pretty well. In general, what do you go into the under-18s? Your thoughts about going into under-18s?
I mean, I'll be totally frank with you. I've been so locked in on this 2016 NBA draft. that this is going to be my introduction to a lot of these kids. I've seen some of them. I know that, you know, there's some really highly touted guys. So maybe after the championship, I'll have a much better idea than now. But for, I'm going in with eyes wide open, and I'm going to watch every single roster and every single player and really try to figure that out, because I don't know yet. That's the answer right now. I mean, I've heard there's hype on some guys. I've seen the Jordan Brand kids. I've seen some of them, see some of these under 17 guys. Some of these guys play in high school, I may have seen them there, but on the whole, I mean, Simonich, I've seen him, obviously, Basketball Without Borders, but I don't know these guys well enough yet to talk expertly.
Let's talk about your expertise then. You know, there was Internationals 26, is that the official count?
What's that?
How many internationals?
27 out of 60.
Is that 27 with Sabonis or without?
I mean, with all the college guys, with Buddy Hield and those guys.
Yeah, but they didn't include Sabonis in the 26. So are they including him on the international list?
Right. I wrote 15 out of 30, and the NBA wrote 14 out of 30. I was wondering who they missed. So that, yeah. I don't know how they missed Sabonis. Oh, I guess because Sabonis was
born in Oregon.
Yeah, but he's European.
Right. Maybe in general, your thoughts about the draft? Maybe a surprise here, maybe a great pick there. I mean, we have a game coming up. We don't want to go too much further, too much longer. But you know, give me just a couple of your thoughts.
Maker at 10 was a surprise. Papianis at 13. Maybe Yabusele at 16. Caris LeVert at 20. Those are, you know, there was the 10 to 20 range was surprising. I mean, I think the top 9 we nailed. We knew who that was going to be. 10 to 20, we were all over the place. And then, you know, the guys that didn't go in the 10 to 20 range went in the 20 to 30 range, and then Zubac at 32. I'm surprised he fell that far, even though I understand why. So, yeah, those are some of the surprises for me.
Looking at your mock draft for 17, international basketball fans will know the three of the first four pretty well, with Giles, Tatum, and Josh Jackson going.
And Fultz will be at the under 18.
And he'll be under 18 and then go for 19s. And then
and
obviously.
And then Nick Dakina, we know from under 18s and under now 18s. Under 20s.
So, in general, thoughts about the 17 draft class? Do you see it? I know we're still a year out, but do you see it as a stronger, back to the stronger USA? Is there a one-and-done group that'll make that group a little bit stronger? Be fewer internationals? You know, obviously the college season was a little, you know, older. You know, the guys were a little bit older, Valentine, Jang, and those guys. Thoughts about 17?
NBA folks are really excited about this group of kids. So I think at the top, especially at the point guard position, we're going to see a little bit more star power, maybe. Maybe it'll go a little bit deeper. This is considered like a two-player draft. We've done 16, which may be unfair, but you know, that 3 through 8 range this year, there wasn't a lot of separation there. And then 9 through 60, I mean, really could have gone any way. So I think that, you know, people that I really trust, the, you know, Evan Danielses and the Josh Gershoms who were here, you know, in Zaragoza, they really are very high on this 2017 high school class. And then I'm very high on the 97 and 98 international group. So I think we're going to see an interesting crop. And then we'll always have the Buddy Hields and guys like that that are going to emerge. I mean, it's inevitable. You're going to have seniors, and with the way that the rookie scales are, the NBA rookie scale is structured, if you can get a very good rotation player for $2-3 million a year, you got to do that. We're seeing free agency.
Oh my goodness.
You know, you're getting backups going for $12-14 million a year. And so if you can get a guy that can play for $2-3 million, you're doing really well for yourself. So I think you're going to see maybe a little bit more of a premium on, you know, the Denzel Valentines and the Bryce Johnsons and the Buddy Hield, those seniors.
That are play ready.
Yeah, that are ready to play. So not a lot of guys went back, honestly. So it'll be interesting, but guys always emerge.
Thank you for all the time.
Thank you for having me.
Fantastic stuff as always from Jonathan. Don't expect anything less than that from the man. All right, let's see, another check. Still nothing from FIBA Europe about the under 18 European Championship. All right. Well, I'm gonna run. Need to get this out and let you enjoy it. Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff going on. I mean, the under 18 FIBA Americas, that goes until Saturday. Saturday is the final. And then on Friday, the 22nd, start the under 18, the FIBA Asia under 18 championship and the FIBA Africa under 18 championship. FIBA Africa and FIBA Asia under 18s both start on Friday the 22nd. So by the time we talk next time, I don't even know if I don't think the under 7, under 8, under 20s will be done. No, 20 under 20s, under 20s. Where was I? Players under 20s, 24. Yes. No, that ends on Saturday. Sunday. That ends on Sunday. And so under 18 FIBA Americas ends on Saturday. Under 20 Europeans end on Sunday. FIBA Africa, FIBA Asia under 18s both start on the 22nd on Friday. So I guess 2 days of three different tournaments. So listen, hey, if you can't find any of these games to watch, if you don't, you know, have any reason to watch any of these games, you're not a basketball fan. Great stuff. Can't wait to see the Africans and the Asians, just because you don't have a chance to see them very often. You know, the 20s is cool to see where the guys are going, how they're doing. But, you know, definitely want to see, you know, it's cool to see the FIBA Americas under 18s because there's a lot of new guys there. And it'll be the same with the FIBA Asia and FIBA Africa. So, again, it's all on stream online at FIBA.com and the YouTube, FIBA YouTube/FIBA. So go check it out. Last thing, I want to let you know what you're going to be listening to. The song is called Morning, Noon, and Night by Daddy Longlegs, and it is available on freemusicarchive.org. Again, if you want to help support the show, go to patreon.com/ taking the charge, all one word. Go there and pledge some support to the show and keep it going. So until next week, enjoy all this fantastic basketball, and we'll see you in a week's time.
Hello, my name is Sergio Scariolo, and you are listening to Taking the Charge.